I'm Wendell. I'm living loved by God. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food and work and control. I've had issues with pornography and alcohol and depression and rage and panic. I've had some revelations yesterday and today. Somebody said about 2 or 3 years into Celebrate Recovery here, it was actually Larry who said, people are either love-driven or they're fear-driven. We've been saying it ever since, but it's true. We say it because it's true. Whenever I hit a hitch, whenever I hit a time when I know things are out of sorts, it's out of rhythm, there's no flow to my life, inevitably, I've gone back over to fear and away from love. And fear involves control. Fear involves not trusting. Fear involves judging, condemning. It involves a lot of stuff that is just unhealthy. I don't know how many he's got left in him, but Wayne preached a good one this morning. Boy, it was powerful. And we went and listened, and I was like, thank you, brother. You pulled me back over out of fear into love, and it's pretty powerful, pretty rich, pretty meaningful. So you can listen to it on the podcast, I'm sure, the Greenwood podcast. But I've gone to the spiritual chiropractor, and I've been adjusted. And so I'm feeling a little bit better tonight. We're on a series on shame and regret and guilt. We've talked about shame, and we've talked about guilt, and now we're going to talk about regret. And you have a temperature gauge in your car, a reorientation, so everybody's on the same page, that you have a temperature gauge in your car. It's when it's off, it's on cold. When it's running right, it's right in the middle. When it's running hot, it's way up. So you watch it. It tells you, it gives you a clear indication of how your motor's running, the health of your motor. And we have the same thing in us, that when you make simple mistakes, like we just call them oops, you know, oops, that's regret. You know, I should have not set the milk so close to the edge, or my coffee cup on the dashboard of the car, it wouldn't have fallen off, whatever. That's regret, that's oops. And then the other extreme is shame, where I apologize for existing. I'm sorry that I'm even a human being, because I'm an inconvenience to everybody, and I'm nothing but a pile of dog doo, just I'm worthless. That's shame. And in the middle is guilt. We talked about that last week. That guilt is the normal response that God gave us, the emotional response that God gave us when we damage the planet some way. We damage another human being. We damage ourselves. We damage God. We do something that causes hurt to God's creation. Well, we feel guilt. Just like you feel anger when you see a child being abused, or you feel fear when a snake is coiled up in front of you, or guilt is just a normal emotion. There's nothing wrong with it. It's simply an emotion that tells you something probably needs to be done. Fear tells you move away from the snake, you know. Guilt tells you amends needs to be made. You know, that's simply what it is. So we're going to talk about regret, and you would think, well, why do we even need to talk about that? If you're going to use the temperature gauge analogy, the car's just sitting in the driveway. It's not even running, you know. It's all the way on cold. Regret is inconsequential. It doesn't mean anything. It really does. We found out Thursday night in our midst on the problem. Drew is working on a lesson, which I love. He's working on a lesson on the proper and in the improper way to spill your coffee. We talked about it afterwards. But there was an analogy in the lesson, for those who weren't there, that said that when you, on the way to work, you spill your coffee in your car, your truck, whatever, if you have simple regret, you just say, well, shoot, you know, I'm going to have to fix it where I don't spill it next time. You get to work, you pull up, you run in, get some paper towels, wipe it up, throw them away, and 5 minutes into your day, it's not even on your mind. You're not even thinking about it. I'm a loser. This is going to make me late. You know, the boss is going to be upset. He already doesn't like me, but why would he? I'm a piece of shit anyway. So, you know, all you do is you spill your coffee, but it just becomes this enormous catastrophe that reinforces your feelings about yourself, that you're absolutely worthless. So you see the two extremes there, regret and shame. But one thing that we didn't talk a lot about in our, at least the ladies may have, but the men didn't talk about it in the group, is that over time, most of us adopt one of two ways of dealing or viewing life, like handling life. I don't know the best way to say that. But it falls into this fear and love camp. It really does. Everything ultimately falls into this, you're either fear-based or you're love-based. But, and you'll kind of see as we go along, this is what I'm going to talk about tonight, is that we view life one of two ways. And some of us could testify, I used to view it this way, and now I view it this way. But some of us may say, I still view it that way. This is the way I view life. And so this is not my idea. I'm shamelessly steal it from Wayne. But I tell him, dude, if you don't want me to steal your ideas, write a book. And he says he's working on one. He needs to write a book. I'm telling you, that dude needs to write a book. But he said, this was way back in the days of Grace Fellowship. I remember it's the first time he ever introduced this idea. He said, you either look at life, this is what you're going to hear tonight, so get it the first time, okay? I'll tell it again. Those who are a little bit slow, I'll tell it again. No, just joking. You either look at life as a test that has to be passed or an adventure that needs to be explored. I'll just let that sink in for a minute. You either view life as a test that has to be passed or an adventure that needs to be explored. If you spill your coffee, let's go back to that analogy, you stupid coffee on the way to work, what did you do? You stupid idiot. Yet again, you failed a test. Simple test. Do you not understand gravity? Do you not understand physics? Do you not understand that you don't fill a mug that full? What is wrong with you? How many times did your mom tell you? How many times did your dad tell you? How many times has the boss told you not to be late to work, and yet you took the time to fix that extra cup of coffee? So see, life instantly is this test, and you are perpetually failing this test. It's something you have to get right. You're being tested at work, whether you're on time or not, whether you're efficient or not. In your relationships, you test yourself. In your prayer life, you test yourself. In your all of your, what you consider your spiritual, religious, church life, whatever you want, I did not read enough scriptures. Or when I was in that class that they were talking about a scripture, I got the wrong answer. I didn't answer it correctly. What is wrong with me? I've been through Sunday school. I've been through Bible school when I was a kid. I've been to summer camps. I've sat through revivals. I've sat through countless sermons. I should have known the answer to that question, and I didn't. What is wrong with me? When I get to heaven, as soon as I get there, St. Peter is going to give me a 5-page test and a pencil. Please put an X in the box. Do not put a check. I'll probably get that wrong. But that's what life is to us. And you literally think, I mean, who doesn't have the picture from somewhere in their past, in their mind, that God is literally sitting there with a pencil and a paper ready to check off whether you passed or failed your test? I'm just shamelessly stealing this from all kind of people from my life. But I stole this from our 30-year-old son. But he, one time, I don't know, we were going turkey hunting, whatever, we were sitting in my little red truck. I love my little red truck. We were sitting in my little red truck driving, and he said, Dad, he said, do you realize how ludicrous traditional Christianity is in the way they teach you that you've got maybe 70, 80, maybe 90 years to get it just right? And if you don't get it right, you burn for eternity in hell. You get one chance to get it right. And if you don't, you stand in front of a God who's standing there with a piece of paper and a pencil, waiting to say, no, you don't. It doesn't add up. You didn't make it. You flunked the test. Now, guess what you get? You get eternal damnation. Not just 2 weeks, not just a couple years, but eternal damnation for flunking the test. And that's the way it was presented to me. I don't know about you. That's the way it was presented. Life is a test. And you either pass or fail that test. And so you better be on your best behavior. You better study. You better get it right. Because you've only got, who knows how long you've got? Wayne thought he had longer. My first wife thought she had way longer. You know, she died at 30. You know, you don't know how long you've got. You better get it right. Because you're gonna, it's just, life is a test. Dang, that's heavy. Shoot, I feel sick to my stomach just thinking about that. It's just like, really? This is what I believed, and this is what I taught, and this is what I preached for years. This is the way I saw the story of Scripture. That's, I read it and studied it and paid big money to go to school to learn it, and this is the conclusion I came out of it. Seriously? Well, about in 2005, when we moved to Bowling Green, and I started to spend all this time with Wayne, he was going through the same path that I was going through. And we looked at each other and said, there's got to be an alternative. This can't be right. Because his track is the same as mine. We went to the same college. We went to the same seminary. We pastored in the same denomination. We're the same age, identical. Our stories were identical. And I looked at him and said, how's perpetually fail? Day after B, I failed the test. I won't get mad today. I got mad. I won't be hypocritical or deceitful today. I just lied. I won't hate on anybody. I'll love everybody. I just hated on somebody. I won't judge anybody. I just judge that person. I could not pass the test. Every night I went to bed, a colossal failure. And in my darker moments, if God comes tonight, I don't have a chance. I'm lost. And I'm a pastor standing up front trying to teach people how to be found. And I'm thinking, in my darker moments, in the, like 2 or 3 in the morning when I'd wake up, I'd think, I'm not going to make it. I'm literally not. I have failed the test over and over and over. And so when we got together, we said, okay, if we got this wrong? So we gave each other license and permission and encouragement to explore what, if there is something else, let's try to find it. So we started to explore grace, and we started to explore the love of God and the character of God, and tried our best to leave behind all the stuff we'd been taught by our religion, by our denomination, by our college and seminary profs who were from that same tradition. Just leave that behind. What if we go back and we read the story brand new? Look at it just brand new and see what God looks like when we do it that way. And so we would read huge chunks, not verses, but huge chunks of the story. You know what I'm saying? Like a whole book. That's a lot of fun when you get to Leviticus and Exodus. Just sit down and just chew that one up real quick. But I was actually fascinated when I did that. It was like, oh, I saw things I didn't see before. But we started looking at the big picture, the big story. And if God is just, what is all this big story about? Everything reeks of grace and love and generosity. It all reeks of it. It's everywhere. Unconditional, no strings attached. Grace. Everywhere. Every, you know, Sting sings, every breath you take. Every breath you take is a gift from God. Every thought you think, every feeling you feel, every person who comes across your path. Life is a complete, absolute, second-by-second gift from God. And he just keeps stringing it to you. Just keeps giving it to you. When I start, both of us, when we started to see it that way, it was no longer some heavy-handed thing where, you know, you enjoy the day because at the end of the day, you're still going to have to take a test on it. It wasn't that. It was at the end of the day, you would sit and you would think, God, did you see what God did today? Did you see the encounters in the people and the feelings and the thoughts and the, did you see that? Did you feel that? Did you soak it in? And so the next day you would get up, and this happened slowly. It didn't just happen, boom. It happened slowly. But then it got to where you'd get up in the morning and you'd think, well, what's he got? Every morning became Christmas morning. What's going to be waiting under the tree today? You know? So you'd wake up and you'd think, okay, what encounters am I going to have today? Well, I'm just going to Walmart and going to the tractor supply place to get seed or whatever. But you never know. You never know who you're going to encounter. You never know the conversations you're going to, you don't know who you're going to bump into. You don't know how talkative the checkout person might be. You don't know about the person who needs a buggy and you can give it to them. You don't know. You don't know. So you just start to explore every day, what might this look like? What might God have in store today? And so life stopped being a test, and it began to be an adventure. And it began to be, instead of this, you had to cram for a test. Do you remember those nights? Those nights, angst, whatever it is, that and you just have this terrible feeling, I'm not studying the right part of the chapter, or I misunderstood the notes, or I missed that day and I copied so-and-so's notes. I don't know what in the world those notes meant, but I copied them down. But I don't know how they're going to apply to the test. But what I'm talking about, do you remember the feeling of it? That feeling of it. Well, that feeling started to go away, and then it started to be like, and this only would mean something to maybe two of you, three of you. It's the night before the opening day of deer season. Now, see, some of y'all here are like, oh, I know what that feels like. You know, I would rather spend time in the deer woods than anything in terms of just my relaxation. And it's the opening. Tomorrow morning is the opening day of bow season, and I get to go out and be in the woods, and it's just quiet, and you just have that feeling of, I don't know what I'm going to see. I don't know what's going to. It's not about killing deer. It's about being out there, about soaking in. And you think, I don't know what I'm going to see. I don't know what I'm going to experience. I don't know what I'm going to feel. One morning, I crawled up in my tree stand, and I looked eye level. There's a little flying squirrel hugged onto the tree, and I thought, oh, shoot, I don't want to mess him up. And I sat there and just looked at it for a while, and I thought, well, somebody's going to have to do something. So I moved just a little bit, and that thing jumped off the tree. Oh, I went there to hunt deer, and that's what I got to experience. I mean, I could tell you story after story, and that's just using a deer hunting analogy. What about real life? You know, I came to work Monday morning here, and my office is upstairs in the Sunday school room, I called Robbie when I finally made it up there because I just wanted her to know I'm just now making it to my office. She's like, what? But there was somebody who needed me. And so as I was walking down the hall, I started talking to him. It turned into a 45-minute to an hour time, just encouraging them and helping them. And I when I went up in my office, I was just floating. I thought, oh, wow. I had no idea that was going to happen today. But I wasn't thinking, boy, I hope I did that right. You see? What would that have done? You know? Think about it. Did you all just feel a downer right there? Yeah. But that's how we live our lives. We all these blessings we encounter and everything, and then that old voice from the other way of thinking comes in. I don't think you said exactly what you should have said there. I don't think you did what you should have done. I think you should have added this. Really? You're going to pollute this with this? And here's something else. I didn't discover this by myself. Wayne and I did together. If you love on somebody, you explore what love looks like in that conversation with that person right then. You need to believe in the power of love, not the power of performance. Simply believe in the power of the love that you shared and stop grading yourself on, did I say it just right? Did I do it just right? Believe in the power of love. Clumsy love is good love. Sloppy love is good love. You know, awkward love is good love because it's love. So, if there's my whole thing when I'm standing up here is I hope that we're getting this. There's two ways of living life. And one way is to pass the test. If you're constantly saying, well, I know I need to do better, you're living in this camp. If you're constantly saying, I need to work harder on this, you're living in this camp. If you're constantly saying, well, I need to read more, I need to be more diligent, that's all I know to say because I lived there most of my life. If you're over here, you're falling flat on your face day after day, and you're loving every minute of it. It's like, I don't care. I don't care. And I'm stealing from Wayne again, because you know why? Every time you fall, you're falling forward. You're moving in the, you're pushing a wheelbarrow. Remember that picture he helped us draw? You're pushing your wheelbarrow. You're moving forward. So every time you fall forward. You fall into your wheelbarrow, but you're going the right direction. And so you put your head on the pillow at night and say, thank you, God, that you gave me opportunity to participate in the adventure called life, the big adventure that you've created. Thank you that you've given me the opportunity to participate in that. And the concentration is, now most of us are saying, now, but you ought to also add, sorry, I didn't do it so well. Did that cross your mind? You're trying to get back over here. You see? You're just thanking for the opportunity of participating. Period. No, I'll do better. And what he's doing, not about me and how well I'm performing. It's the bigger picture of what God is doing, not how am I performing. And because as soon as you start checking your performance, the next day you'll get up and you say, this is an adventure, but I'm going to do it better than I did yesterday. And now you're leaking back over here, and that's the problem I had that I told you when I first got up here. I was leaking back over into here to where life was all about me and how I was performing and how people were thinking about my performance, how they're feeling about my performance. That's a whole other thing that we didn't even mention. When you're in this mode over here, you're always worrying about what people think about you. You're always worrying about, do they like me? Do they think I did that well? If they had flashcards, would they hold up a 10, or would they hold up a 5, or would it be less than that? You know, I blew that dive. You know, when we live life as if not just God is scoring. It's just, it doesn't, you believe in the power of love, not your performance. So if people criticize you, you think, yeah, but love's going to get you. I wasn't counting on my performance to get you. I'm counting on love getting you, and I know for sure it's going to get you. I'm not counting on my performance. I'm counting on love. So you don't take it personally. You see what I'm saying? You don't take it personally. You just think, no, sorry, I believe in love, and it's going to do its thing, and it's going to do it far better than I could, but I got to play a little part in it. I got to participate just a little bit in it, and that was fun. Did I do it well? I don't know if I did or not, but I do believe in the power of love, and it's gonna get you. That's a whole other lesson. Can you think of the confidence you have in the day when you go through the day and everybody you encounter, you're giggling your ass off because you're thinking, love's going to get you. You're not saying it, but you're just thinking, you think you're so ugly and you're so mean, or that you're such a badass. You know, you think you're so tough, whatever. Love's going to get you. Love is going to get you. I might not, but love is going to get you. And one of these days, you're going to melt in a puddle of tears and you're going to think, oh, shoot, love kicks butt. And you're going to want to move from this camp over to this camp. But I ain't going to be the one that moves you. Love, the power of love, is the one that's going to move you. And so you see the confidence you have in that? You don't have confidence in yourself. You have confidence in the power of love, and you got to play a little part in it. Just a little part. But that makes it fun. And that's all I got to say. It's 6:51. Where are you, Mr. Nami? Oh, no, wait. We're supposed to do a song, then you do your thing. I forget how we do these things.